Join us in a world where you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Sit back as we discuss hard lessons from the best and brightest the personal defense and competition shooting industry has to offer. Let us help you help yourself, no matter where you are on your personal path. Ballistic Radio is brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. Now here's your host, John Johnson.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. I'm your host, John Johnson. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, class announcements, and whatever else strikes my fancy. And probably for the next 8 weeks or so, it'll be me gushing about The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, free advertisement. I know Disney's evil, but The Mandalorian's awesome. At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Hey, Joe.
Almost done.
Yay! We're going to be almost done right as I get into the groove.
As usual.
Yeah, you know. But hey, guess what?
What's that?
This segment's also brought to you by Centurion Arms. Even if you're just a cook, a lowly, lowly cook. Are you calling tactical nukes from your couch every night with ease? You need to know that your life-saving equipment is going to work, and Centurion Arms knows it too. Veteran-owned and operated, Centurion Arms is dedicated to producing firearms, parts, and accessories with an outstanding level of quality, functionality, and precision at prices you can afford. Whether you just need a new rail or barrel or something else to finish off your latest build, or maybe you want to take all the guesswork out and buy a complete rifle, Centurion Arms has got what you need and knows that when you need it, you need it to work. Visit CenturionArms.com today to check out all their awesome products. Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. So, he's back for his second appearance. It's a doubleheader. John Murphy from FPF Training. John, how's it going?
Going well, John. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. Better than the first episode we recorded where, like, everything was sort of at rest, hadn't gotten moving yet, and now my brain is actually functioning at its usual capacity, which is still somewhat limited, but it's better than when it is not functioning at capacity. And then I say really weird, like awkward, that didn't make sense sort of things. But anyway, for those that might have missed the last episode or have a very short attention span like I do, who are you and what do you do?
John Murphy of FPF Training. I'm about to retire from my cushy government job and go full-time on the road teaching concealed carry classes across this great land of ours. I've been at it for about 15 years, a little longer than that now. Raised up under Pat Rogers and Louis Auerbach, Tom Gibbons, and usual cast of characters associated with that crew. And I'm just kind of looking forward to, in my declining retiring years, driving about the country in my RV named Maslow, and just meeting all you fine people and having a good time with while I still got something left to give.
Well, I think I strongly suspect that you'll be given stuff well into your golden years, and you know, frankly, the impact that you are having on side of our community. Inside of our community, I think is going to be an amazing legacy well after you're gone. You know, so I think you're doing a lot of really cool things, and people would be very well served in spending time and money with you to come out and see those cool things.
You've just earned an invitation to my funeral to speak.
I will tell all of the best lies, sir. So
I appreciate that.
No, of course. But so something that we sort of touched on in the last episode that I thought would be worth discussing further and would sort of fall under the mindset category. So mindset's one of those things that, you know, we need to talk about mindset, and you've got to have a good mindset. And it's kind of one of those words that gets thrown out, and then depending on who's talking about it, they don't say much more than that. But I had used the pop culture reference, you know, inside of like a self-defense encounter, the concept that we're not locked in to the encounter with the person attacking us. The person attacking us is locked into the encounter with us at a certain point. And I kind of like to dive deeper into that. So I'll let you start.
Sure. I'll relate a story that Tom Gibbons gave me in a class that he interviewed an armed robber one time who was shot by one of his victims. And the guy said, well, that's not fair. So that gives you an idea of where they're coming from. If we revert to the range master philosophy that our students are reluctantly willing but highly, highly capable, that is a level of skill to, as it were, push back against the power curve that the vast majority of the criminal element has no idea even exists out there. And if we are satisfied in our own mind of our capacity for violence, our capability to go from 0 or 1 or 2 to 11 in 1.3 seconds or less, so we have that quantified in our mind, we become profoundly dangerous to that element. There was an incident recently, not far from where I live, in Crystal City, or Pentagon City, where people who work at the Pentagon in various buildings nearby, well, they are some of the most dangerous humans that walk on the planet today. And there have been a couple incidents now, but most recently about a year ago, of someone deciding to carjack one of those people. And he was promptly shot dead for his troubles. I'll guarantee you that kid had no concept that that kind of danger was part of his career path. If we have that, if we can develop ourselves to that capacity, we find that it's actually, we mentioned it in the last episode, I learned from Kelly McCann, it's very calming to be validated by having that template appear before you, and you understand what it is, and you know exactly what you can do and what you will do in that moment. And it makes us profoundly dangerous people as a result.
Well, and I think that it'd probably be worthwhile to spend some time talking about what that is and what that isn't. And I certainly, and it's embarrassing to do so, but I remember my mindset when I first got into all of this, and thank God it has evolved and hopefully matured. But we're not talking about, you know, the blustery bravado of like, I'm a dangerous man, you know, to where we're trying to intimidate or put on this front. That's not, and I don't feel comfortable speaking for most people, but I feel comfortable even speaking for you in this. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is an extreme level of capability and comfortableness with the realities of, you know, violent interpersonal conflict and the things that go along with it, and sort of, you know, almost a quiet confidence, right?
Absolutely. And at some point, it's not, well, it's conflict of a sort, but it's a response to predation. And puts us definitely on the side of the angels, very righteous approach. And if we are appropriately armed with options and the capacity to see it coming and the mental and physical wherewithal to see it through to the end, it's a life-altering event, it's a game changer, as it were. I hate to use that term, but because we know. And we know what we know, and they don't. If I can, now I'll use a Secretary Rumsfeld there. We know what we know, and they don't know what we know. And therein lies the danger gap for them. And we want to achieve that. And this isn't about becoming Billy Badass and walking around and enforcing your will upon people, hither and yon, as some unfortunate concealed carry type holders have that mindset. I have a permit, I have a gun, therefore I am the law. Yeah. This isn't about that at all. That pathway is fraught with peril, as evidenced by that gentleman in Florida who caught that 15-year stretch when he was a self-appointed handicapped parking spot enforcer. You may recall the incident, John.
Oh, I do.
And he was giving a woman quite the harangue. The woman's husband appeared, shoved him on the ground, and the guy got up to his knees and he drew his pistol. And there was a pause there, a perceptible pause. It's like, okay, let's see. In the few times I have trained, every time I pull my gun from my holster, I've shot. Ergo, therefore, to wit, I must shoot now. And he fired a fateful and fatal shot, and now he's in, I think, year two of his 15-year prison stretch. We can't be that person either.
Yeah.
We have to be measured in our response, but have the ability, a rheostat, as it were, to dial things up and dial them back down. That is a level of capability and capacity that most people don't comprehend as the desired end state. There's always the man, I'm gonna get that sub-second draw. I'm gonna get that 0.15 split, which is lovely, a skill in isolation, but there's a time and a place, and we have to be able to apply that at the right time, at the right place, or we set ourselves up for scrutiny and ultimately prosecution.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think people sort of miss out on is, you know, ultimately, if we need to use a firearm to defend ourselves, and ultimately that need looks like us firing a shot or is us firing a shot, that's still a bad outcome. It's just the
it's just the
best possible worst outcome. And that's kind of like a hard concept for people to get in mind. We got about a minute left in this segment, but you kind of see what I'm saying there?
Absolutely. In our context, even displaying a pistol is going to subject us to a high level of scrutiny. And if you are not prepared to articulate what you did, why you did it within a legal concept, and most importantly, be right in having done that, perform that action, well, in our current legal environment, even traditionally gun-friendly localities are looking very hard at these circumstances, and people are catching not just charges but convictions as well. It's the best of times and the worst of times, and a lot of this goes back to the training these people select, and there are shooting instructors, and then there are armed self-defense instructors, and there's significant overlap between the two genres, If someone's background is blowing open the door under night vision goggles at 2 o'clock in the morning and shooting everybody in the face, then exchanging high tens and then riding off into the sunrise in a helicopter, there's a time and a place for that. And I would argue that it's not on Main Street USA.
Yeah. We can actually talk about that a little bit more in just a second. Right now we're talking with John Murphy from FPF Training. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-used rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the EDC X9 series of firearms, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity as well as reliability at wilsoncombat.com. So you were sort of talking about how context plays an important role in selecting who we train with and the tactics and procedures that we employ. And I think that is... You know, so I've learned a lot of amazing things from Tom Givens and subsequently stolen them and incorporated them into the material that I'm teaching. But if I had to select one that is probably the biggest influence he's had on me personally. It was that first introduction to the conversation that, you know, essentially most of the training that we are, you know, taking in is coming from one of three places, or is contextually, you know, derived from one of three places. And while sometimes there is overlap, there is also significant differences based off of the job that we're ultimately trying to do. And, you know, people seem to miss that.
If you draw that Venn diagram of military, law enforcement, and competitive background, the overlap overshooting, there's definitely some interlocks there quite nicely. But contextually, the background, well, is military guys are there to enforce the nation's will upon an armed opponent. Law enforcement people are there to enforce the law. And competitors are there to win a game. Bits and pieces apply, but in the self-defense realm, that context, well, we just want to go home. If going home involves having to produce a firearm or shoot someone, well, there's going to be a whole string of consequences associated with that, not the least of which will be a significant financial drain. And that's where a lot of people who come into this, use the term lifestyle, the self-reliant, self-sufficient, armed, effective armed citizen lifestyle, really don't appreciate that as a potential back end to any action they might take. I've learned a lot from the LE community. I've learned a lot from the Special Forces Military Shooting community. I am putting my toe into the competitive marksmanship or practical pistol competitive shooting community as well, because frequently that last one has driven a lot of what the military, particularly at the high end, ends up doing as part of what their tactics, techniques, and procedures and skill sets that they acquire for use on the very cutting edge. I will also say that this is absolutely the best time in my 58.5-year memory to seek training. We've come so far in so many ways. When I can take a class from Masada U at one end and a Kyle DeFore at the other end and a Tim Heron at the other end, and not to mention the other IPSC greats along the way, it is truly a smorgasbord of awesome. Take your pick. But just for us, it always has to come back to what we apply at that moment and the legal scrutiny that we will be subjected to if we fail to meet that standard.
Well, and, you know, so one of the things, too, that so everyone, you know, I've kind of noticed this and I'm happy about it. One of the things inside of our community that people talk about all the time is, you know, how much it's circular in nature. Like, we discover something, we teach it.
Oh, yes.
It's in favor, it falls out of favor, someone rediscovers it, so on and so forth, right? But one of the advantages, and is as many horrible things as the internet has brought us, it has brought us some really cool things as well. One of the advantages of the age that we're living in right now is it appears to me, I could be wrong, but it appears to me that we are losing less things from, you know, previously discovered lessons because information is stored and shared differently. And, you know, it's a horrible tragedy when we lose someone, but they're not gone in as significant a fashion, and specifically their lessons are not gone in as significant a fashion as it would have been a generation ago.
And, interesting point. If I can jump in here,
yeah.
I would say that the memory hole still exists, but it is a lot more shallow than it once was.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and I don't want to say that it doesn't still happen, because it absolutely does, but I'm hoping that You know, you're talking, I agree, we're in the golden age of training. Like, and I've not been doing this nearly as long as some other people have been, but even inside of, you know, my time in this field, things have gotten, you know, significantly cooler, for lack of a better word. And it seems like less and less things are going to be lost, and there's been more of a foundation laid, like, moving forward. There are new people coming up that have, like, a really good base for some of the things that we're talking about as far as the importance of, you know, a holistic approach to all of this, you know?
Absolutely. But if you want a new idea, read an old book is a phrase. Much of this has been done before, but I will also agree that the next generation has even higher shoulders of greats to stand upon. Pat left a legacy. He was a very prolific writer. Few people appreciate that. In addition to his amazing capacity for networking people, places, and times together, his work will echo for generations to come. There are others out there. Louis Auerbach, gone too soon as well, but again, very prolific writer. The current cutting edge of the let's just say that these guys and more than a few gals now, thank God, are going to have a lasting impact, at least until, you know, the collapse of society, the Library of Alexandria burns again, and we lose it all, and we have to, you know, humanity to rebuild, blah, blah, blah. But that, I think, is a ways away. You mentioned the internet, the capacity for to look back now as a result of internet technology. And I would commend everyone to go out to YouTube and look up. There's a video out there of the L.A. Sheriff's Office qualification and training circa 1935, 1936. Please try to look past the trick shot part of the video where they're shooting cigarettes out of each other's mouths. That was definitely an artifact of the time. We don't do that now. But as you go through the video, though, they actually have an armor check out every revolver. They shoot a qualification course, and then they shoot a variety of scenario-based courses of fire, which are both timed and scored. And I don't know where it was we lost that from 1935, and we had the intervening in the World War II years, and then the 60s. And when I talked to Tom, he said we kind of lost it in the 60s. And then it's gradually made its way back to the fore. So what was old is new again. And we just need to do a better job of discarding what was old and should have been debunked. Fences are usually built for a reason. We need to understand why they were erected. Particularly when someone takes a pseudoscience, throws out a few marketing terms and declares it as the new undiscovered best way, that should always give rise for a skeptical eyebrow. Eyebrow goes like, huh, I know this has been done before and it was tossed aside for this reason. But writ large, these are the best of times.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, we've been, you know, inside of the United States of America, right, we've been shooting each other with handheld weapons for our entire history, right? Other places inside of the world, you know, guns have been around for several hundred years now. And there are certain aspects to this where, yes, the technology changes and they allow us greater capability and stuff like that. But at a certain point, you know, people are people. And I think we lose sight of that. Sort of tying it back around to the again, and I actually don't like using this term, but it's common parlance, but like tying it back around in the mindset side, do you And again, I've timed this poorly because I'm going to ask a question, then I'm not going to leave you time to respond to it before the break.
Perfect timing, from my perspective. Perfect timing.
Yeah, it allows you to gather your thoughts.
Exactly.
We've understood forever that decisiveness was probably the most important component to all of this, but it seems like that's not always focused on. I'd like to get your thoughts as to why that is when we get back from the break. So we're talking with John Murphy from FPF Training. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all of your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the Candela from ModLight at the lowest price. No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and now you need an optic on your carry gun. Well, BigTexOutdoors.com has those and they're not going to judge. Glock accessories? Yes, fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike, too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So I was asking about decisiveness and how that seems to be, you know, throughout the ages, the lesson that is continuously handed down from generation to generation. And, you know, a lot of people talk about it. Anyone that really understands all of this talks about it. But it seems like people are constantly rediscovering how important that is. I don't know. Maybe I'm off base. What do you think?
You know, I want to avoid too much of a comment on society writ large. But certain morals, ethics, and values have been disparaged for quite some time. And among, you know, from decisiveness and individuality, we've become to inclusiveness and the group. And I think as a result, we may have been diluted a bit. And let me throw out a term if I can pull it off, diluted and diluted. The requirement remains. Decisive action is the key for any success, great success in life. People don't achieve greatness by just meandering to the top. It takes decisive action. In our context, survival in a criminal defense predatory situation requires decisiveness. I don't want to think about, well, what got this person to this point at this time to where he's threatening my life? What have I done? Why did I cause him? Why is he the victim at this point? I think we've embraced that to our detriment. And I'm hopeful that the old style is coming back into mainstream.
It's kind of interesting in that. So for better or for worse, I've been a decisive person at multiple points inside of my life. And I've gotten it right sometimes, and I've been very lucky in that I've been, you know, in the right place at the right time and done things that were favorable for me. You know, and I'm not saying necessarily in a violent encounter, but just professionally or what have you. And there's been other moments where that decisiveness has been a horrible detriment to me and my overall goals in, you know, moments where, you know, I've come across as arrogant or, you know, done or said things that were not, you know, the impression that those things caused was not my overall intent. So, and I'm going to tie this back together to self-defense, I promise, just everyone bear with me. So learning when to be decisive and when not to be decisive and when to, you know, have a measured response and, you know, balance, like, has been, you know, something that I've been focusing on, at least lately, and something I need to continue to focus on because it's not always been a strong suit of mine. But inside of our context of the greater defensive problem, when we're talking about decisiveness, that balance is also incredibly important too, because the timing and the when and the how can have like really dire consequences for us if we get it wrong, right?
Absolutely. Let's hone this down to the point of absolutely irreconcilable conflict. Going through life as the proverbial bull in a china shop is not a good approach. But to distill it to the essence of what we were discussing, time and timing, at that moment of decision, at that moment of opportunity, absolute decisiveness is crucial. Cooper has it listed highly up in his Principles of Self-Defense, as I recall. And what a great little red, you know, if you have to read a little red book, that's a fine one just to have. And at the end of it, we have to be exactly right in our interpretation of a situation, and there's very little ambiguity to be found when there's a pistol in your face. That is not an ambiguous situation. Two or three people walking up on you like, hey, spreading out, like, hey, man, can I ask you a question? Well, that is certainly many indicators are taking place, but yet not calling for the ultimate decision, the ultimate act of decisiveness. Certainly we need to take action and position ourselves appropriately. Having that dial, I guess it's a dial and a button. We can dial it up, but at some point we have to push the button. And that button is the ultimate decision, and ultimately acting with complete decisiveness in that moment.
I had a thought, and it was a good thought, and hopefully my brain will allow me to access it here as I ramble on. Oh, man, it sucks to be me some days, John, I will say.
I got the same syndrome.
Yeah. I know now. So inside of, you know, a self-defense encounter, you were saying that, you know, a pistol in the face is not an ambiguous situation at all. We know exactly what's going on, and we probably know maybe not exactly how we're going to get there, but the general bones of what we're going to do inside of that. Where people, you know, whether they're a private citizen or law enforcement, you could even actually argue militarily, where people encounter problems is inside of the ambiguous situation. So really, for the private, you know, the armed defender, the thing that we need to be doing at pretty much all times is trying to create situations for ourselves, you know, inside of our responses to other people that remove the ambiguity of the situation one way or another. So would you say that, like, parsing through ambiguity is the greatest challenge for us as an armed citizen?
The first time I encountered that term in a self-defense context was during Craig Douglas's Managing Unknown Conflicts seminar as part of his ECQC.
Yeah.
And he calls it sifting through ambiguity. And we have to be attuned to have a variety of means to do that. First off, I will say again that movement is eloquent communication. If someone is saying one thing but continuing to move towards you, they are communicating eloquently their ultimate intent. I forget who it was that's famous for saying, a man will tell you what he means if you listen carefully enough to what they're saying. And if you, I had a student years ago who was accosted and ultimately beaten in a parking lot, assaulted, when the guy kept moving up on her and he said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hurt you. Those words, in conjunction with his continued measured movement toward her, Had she been properly trained, and I chuckle at the prospect of that happening now, had she been properly trained, would have removed all ambiguity from what she was about to face. It's again, there's just some things that are very obvious, and some are much more nuanced. And it depends upon the mode of predation and the overall context in which you're operating. I think I've said before you start trimming the trees off, the limbs off your decision tree, you have to know what kind of forest you're in.
And again, that seems to be something that, you know, there are, you mentioned him, so like Craig Douglas, I know you're doing it. There are others, but that seems to be something that is missing out of a lot of the traditional, you know, defensive pistol classes that historically were taught.
Before Craig, my first instruction outside the Marine Corps, formal firearms instruction, self-defense-wise, came from John Farnham. And before I was managing unknown contacts, I was, quote, talking to Goofy, unquote.
Huh.
And that's what John termed it, talking to Goofy. A rather disparaging term, which I think is useful. And John was an adherent to the interview stance, shooting your pistol against a snatch or a stuffed draw stroke, and just having a he called it eight-track tape from his era, I think it was. Rather, now we got MP3s and MP whatever. Just like, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Go away. Back up. Very, very almost monosyllabic responses to free up our higher thinking and transition to some kind of action capacity. So it was John first, but Craig has really raised the bar with his approach, managing unknown contacts. And my work on that is, again, I stand upon the shoulders of a giant. I've called it street encounter skills because I've kind of widened up the aperture a bit for means by which to de-escalate. Well, first we want to be deselected, and then deconflict, de-escalate, depart. And if those options are not available to us for whatever reason, sometimes, well, then we have to resort to a harsher language, louder volume, tone, tenor, and vocabulary go up. Then we've got an option with pepper spray. And then if the level of threat rises to that necessity, lethal force. And which isn't to say that sometimes going to the pistol can be the default response. Giving time and timing are on our side. We have to have a scope, a spectrum of skills, and again that dial. And we can dial things up, and then ultimately, if we have to, push the red button. But at the end of it, we're going to have to justify what we did and why we did it within that legal context. And for that, there's no greater preparation right now out there. There are two people I recommend without reservation. Obviously, it's Masad Ayoub, and who has built the pyramid upon which he stands astride. And then there's Andrew Branca and his Law of Self-Defense book and his seminars. That should become the foundation of anyone who is really serious about engaging in armed self-defense. Those two are sources I can recommend without hesitation.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. We got to go to break, so we will be right back. We're talking with John Murphy from FPF Training. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Centurion Arms, hard-use rifles and accessories at easy day prices. Visit them online at centurionarms.com. So we're sort of meandering through some of the things that are important for the responsibly armed citizen, someone that has entered into the self-defense lifestyle, like things for them to know and consider and think about. kind of a question I would like to ask for you because, you know, I know you talk about it in class, and it's something that I suspect you have some personal basis for speaking in regards to, and it's something that I have in the past struggled with as well. But one of the most important factors inside of all of this is removing our own bad tendencies from the equation. Do you mind like getting a little bit more in depth on that as far as how we, you know, for lack of a better word, learn to turn the other cheek pre-event? Like, so not, and to be clear, I'm not saying that, hey, when it's time to go, it's time to go, and we're just going to do that. But the avoidance side of things, how do we remove the man in the mirror or woman in the mirror from the equation?
Divorcing ourselves from our ego can be very difficult. For my part, the gun goes on, the ego comes off. That said, I had an incident about 18 years ago that was very formative for me up in D.C. I'll spare the audience. I think I relate the story in one of my videos on YouTube. But the bottom line was I saw a situation evolving in front of me, which evolved a change in the demeanor and action of people who were observing me. As I walked up, I had one guy facing me, one guy facing away. The guy facing away nodded his head. The guy facing me nodded his head, thereby signaling his partner, like, okay, here he comes. And then his partner turned his head and saw me coming. And I'm like, holy cow, I know what this is. And we talked about it earlier, and then it was very common to know what it was, what I was walking into. And I was prepared for it. But I kept walking down the sidewalk toward these two schlubs. I didn't, because I wanted it. I was begging the conflict, which is not the desired course of action.
No.
And the outcome was fine. And next week, I really got my comeuppance in the class I was attending, when I asked the assembled students, hey, did anyone else see those two guys last week? And one of the young ladies in the class, she said, oh, yeah, I saw them. I crossed the street. But what kept me on that sidewalk, John, was that testosterone, ego, and pride. And that is not the path of the enlightened concealed carry, effective armed self-defender. I begged the conflict. I walked into it. And letting that part of our persona go, well, it can be difficult, but you have to reflect upon the consequences of it. You can lose a little bit of face, maybe lose a parking spot. It's amazing how territorial and how violent people can get over parking spots, particularly around the holidays during the shopping season, well, such as it was back in the day.
Yeah.
And what can be the end result of that kind of a conflict? And you've got to let it go. It just isn't worth it. And you view yourself not just through your own eyes, but you look over, particularly if you're doing a man doing the manly thing, and you're worried about being viewed as a lesser. When in fact, I'm reliably informed that the ability to walk away from conflict like that is rather appreciated. Until there's no other way out, in which case the capacity for instantaneous overwhelming violence is also appreciated. But letting that part of our personhood go, it can be difficult, but we have to work on it. I've incorporated it now into my class with a variety of simulated conflicts, dialed up and dialed down. Also, we've got Brian Hill's his little flashcards, which actually at the moment I can't recall the name. He's got
the image-based decisional drills.
Image-based decision-making flashcards was a stroke of brilliance.
Yeah,
that actually allows me.
Well, I have to interrupt. I want to give credit where credit's due. I'm almost certain that was actually Shelley Hill's idea.
Oh, then I stand proudly corrected, because it was a stroke of genius, Brian and Shelley. And what they're doing with that, it helps me a lot. Rather than me constantly having to be the role player, if I can give another student in the class, here, look like this, act like this, it helps move them along, and we get a lot more, if I can use the term reps, in the class, rather than me having to go to each person, you know, one or two times at 14 students, well, we don't get as much action that way. I have found, though, that having students act as role players, it generally doesn't work well, particularly for mucking, because it eventually devolves to both people feel silly, and they start smiling and laughing. And I have to jump in and reinforce the utter seriousness of it, and that is that you are maintaining a boundary, a distance boundary, because with distance, we have time and options. And there's a certain element of our society, kind of a Biden moment there, element of our society which are expert at pushing those boundaries to achieve proximity in order to inflict their will. So it is serious business all the way throughout, and I appreciate the big laugh as much as anybody else, but it has all got to come back down to what we're doing and why we're doing it and what we're preparing for. So to wrap that verbal diarrhea up, that logorrhea up, it's pretty darn serious stuff, and image-based decision-making is a great way to go about doing it.
Well, and something that I try and reference in every class that I teach is, you know, because everyone has done it, is like, hey, how many people here have been driving their car and have either gesticulated at someone or laid on the horn or made angry face and yelled at another driver? And invariably, everyone's hand goes up. And I'm like, what if I told you the next time you were going to do that, you were going to enter into a violent encounter where one of you was going to die? How many people of you would still do that? And invariably, all the hands go down. And I'm like, okay, this is real simple. You need to not kind of think, but have complete and total faith and 100% believe that that is what's going to happen when you do that. And not because it is what's going to happen, but because that mindset, like if you actually like adopt that, will remove a lot of the negative stuff that is possible for us as someone carrying a gun, you know?
That was well said. In fact, I'm going to sharpen my own vehicle environment skills class with that analogy. I have been saying in the past, that little innocuous horn honk that you may give someone might just be all it takes to push them over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And what was a minor delay at a stoplight has just turned into a raging, screaming match, which may culminate with violence. I've got many video examples of just that, as I'm sure you have. If you go through your files, you too have examples of that horn honk. You just don't know how someone's going to interpret your attempt at communication. And the horn honk is very innocuous compared to that digital communication that we've all engaged in, with that that flying middle finger, and the thrust jaw and the mouth words. I just had an incident a few weeks ago on I-95 where I changed lanes in front of a semi, looking where I thought he had certainly sufficient time in stop and go traffic to stop. Well, he didn't, and he leaned on the horn. As he pulled alongside me, he rolled down his window. And he threw and he hit my truck with what I think was his lunch. It was a sack lunch. He was very upset. And you just don't know what is in what combination of input in a given circumstance is going to trigger someone. And then the next thing you know, there you go. So your point is, if you are not prepared for the ultimate consequence of what you're about to do, then maybe you shouldn't do that. It's a damn fine point indeed.
Well, and the other thing, too, and I think that, you know, this bears thinking on, is that, you know, biologically, we are, you know, we are descended from predators. And, yeah, okay, society has rounded the edges off of a lot of that. But the thing that we need to keep in mind is, it is entirely possible for us to get sucked into an encounter and then sort of come to our senses, you know, halfway through and be like, oh, shit, how did I get here? And, you know, so like inside of the scenario that I'm saying, like, depending on the person's response to our anger, they might get angry too, and that might make us more angry to where we escalate it. And like, so just removing that option for ourselves is amazingly important. And I think that, you know, we need to understand, and I'm going to put like quotation marks around this, the enemy. But we also need to understand that there are times where we are the enemy ourselves as well.
We have met the enemy and he is us.
Yep.
I can recall a cartoon of that.
Mm. Mm.
Pogo, before your time, trust me.
Nah, you know, we're coming up on the end of the show. Is there any final thoughts you would like to leave people with and maybe tell folks where they can find you at?
Absolutely. Just that I hope everyone appreciates that there's so much more to this than going down to the local store and strapping on a pistol, taking your four-hour class, and calling yourself prepared. And I'm not saying that just because I'm part of the industry that can profit from people seeking training, but I just want to make sure they understand the consequences of carrying the capacity to instantaneously take someone's life. And it just cannot be a by rote algorithmic equation. There are so many pitfalls that people are unaware of, and it's made worse by the information superhighway, or what Pat called the disinformation cowpath on the internet. I would ask if they seriously vet any potential instructor, recognizing that they're human as well. But make sure that what they're teaching is something that is relevant and within the context of your daily life. And I'd like to think that I've accomplished that with my concealed carry street and counter skills class. You can find more on my philosophy and way I approach things on YouTube, but search for fpftraining.com. And my class schedule for 29 classes across this great land of ours next year is fpftraining.com as well.
Awesome. John, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to everybody. I really appreciate it. I always enjoy it. And I look forward to making it out to a class sometime next year, hopefully, and also having you back on the show.
I'm looking forward to it, John, and I got a lot from our exchange today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries, dude. So, hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes if you think we've earned it, because it really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week. Don't run away.